listening to One to One with Paul Costello, a podcast from the Stanford School of Medicine.
Stanford professor of geriatrics Murdad Ayadi calls his new book, Paths to Healthy Aging, a simple workbook. He's omitted long explanations and complex medical terms to keep it straightforward and accessible for a reader who wants basic information about aging. He says the workbook, co-written with his wife, Hope Azarani, is about creating a lifestyle to lead readers toward the path of a healthy and happy aging process. The chapters discuss nutrition, exercise, mental health, medications, and how to go about choosing the right geriatrician. He urges readers to remember, you only have one precious life to live, and during each step of the way, think about your actions. The important thing he wants to stress is for people to consider how they can turn the journey of aging into a path of excitement, jubilation, and love. Thank you for joining me in One-to-One.
Thank you for having me here, Paul.
Why did you write the book?
As a geriatrician, I have had opportunity to see a lot of elderly in my life. And I'm involved with their diseases. I've been commiserated with their aches and pain, and I try to give them the best relief. And I listen to their fascinating stories. One of the major complaints that I hear from them that there is a lack of valid and easy to understand information about topic of aging. They've been complaining to me that they've been bombarded by a lot of contradictory claims, a lot of instruction that is very difficult to follow, and a lot of the marketing-oriented myths. And That's one of the major things that they're complaining about.
Well, what are they confused the most about?
Well, the confusion is about the first of all, the most of the information is there is either they're very details or very complex, or the instructions. And again, the most of the instructions they're not evidence based, and most of them they're very very difficult to follow. For example, most of the instruction there are. Again, they entice you to do a drastic measures. And that's not going to be fit well.
Well, for instance, give me a for instance. They're drastic in what way?
Right. You know, the marketing campaign outside, again, as we discuss about that, they're trying to tell you to, again, to take some drastic measures and a lot of things about aging. Like, for example, they ask you to do excessive exercise to the death. They're going to ask you to do some diets that can be some of them very drastic. They ask you to take a lot of vitamin and supplements. They're going to ask you to take over-treat a lot of your disease. Like, for example, over-treat your blood pressure, over-treat your cholesterol.
And when you say they, who's the they?
Marketing campaign. Mm-hmm. I will say marketing campaign. Means mm-hmm. that most of information is available now in this days in internet, in books, in magazines, and online resources.
So what you're saying is that people are bombarded with these marketing messages about mm-hmm. food, about nutrition, about supplements, about whatever aspects of aging. And so they want a clear consensus. They want something easy. They want something simple. They want something understandable.
Correct.
Of how do I move through this process of aging?
Exactly. I mean, this is exactly the point that I hear these complaints from a lot of patients. And my wife and I, we, based on our background, we actually review a lot of these books that actually wrote about healthy aging. And we try to put it everything in a very simple format that is very simple, it's easy to understand, it's concise, and it actually covers the most topic about aging, which is nutrition, physical and mental health. It's about over-medication, and it's about frailty and also how to choose a doctor.
I would think one of the things that is confusing, it's confusing to everyone, is the issue that you just talked about, nutrition. Mm-hmm. What should you eat and what should you not eat?
Exactly.
And what should you put in your diet? What should you take out of your diet? So what's the advice that you give people?
Right. You know, it's very, very interesting point, Paul, because as about a diet, I mean, let's just go back to the history and then we can actually kind of learn about the diet what happened actually to this stage. When we look at the history of the diets that they recommend for the people, back to late 80, you remember the day that actually they advertised that you have to take a lot of carbohydrate and you should be, away from fat and protein. Now, carbohydrate becomes friend, fat and protein becomes enemy. The people take a lot of, actually, at that time took a lot of carbohydrate, and actually we ended up with a lot of diabetes and overweight and obesity. 90, the things has been changed. They said, now we go throughout Atkins diet. Let's just go to the protein and fat and be away of carbohydrate. We have a lot of people, they ended up with the coronary artery disease and stroke. Back to 2000, around the 2000, now vegetarian diet and vegan diet or Mediterranean diet became very popular. Now, it's very good good point about a vegetarian, because vegetables and fibers are very essential for gastrointestinal health. But one thing that we should know, when our body age, we need to know what kind of the nutrient we can handle. Like, for example, we may not able to handle a lot of fibers. I never forget, I had a patient in my practice that he came to me. He was seeing multiple doctors, a lot of GI doctors, and he has done a lot of the endoscopy and colonoscopy. His problem was that he had a lot of abdominal pain and cramping every time when he eats the food. And he was taking two kind of antacid medication, a lot of over-the-counter digestive health medication. And one thing, where the first time actually we saw him, we just asked him, what do you eat as a daily basis? And his answer was, I eat healthy diet. And I go to the shop, grocery shop is famous one. They all have organic food and I eat very healthy diet. I said, what do you mean with healthy diet? He said, you know what? In the breakfast, I eat a lot of fruits and oatmeal. And also I have the orange in my backyard. I just squeeze them and I have the freshly squeezed orange juice. At noon, I have a big salad and with a piece of salmon, which is very healthy, as we say. And afternoon also, I have like a vegetable shakes from the same organic stores. And I say, no, wait a minute. You eat a lot of raw vegetables during the day. And that's why you have a lot of cramping and bloating. This is because of your diet. Your GI system is talking to you. You're not able to handle this amount of vegetables. You know, reality is, as a geriatrician, as somebody knowing about the aging process, we need to have a balance of everything, all the nutrients in our diet. We need carbohydrate as a fuel for our body. We need fat because our neurons and also our brain needs fat. We need protein for our muscles. We need fibers for our GI system. That means a balanced diet that has all this nutrient is essential for us. We really don't need to be aggressive, unless if you have medical problem. Like if you have diabetes, we should be aware of carbohydrate. If you have kidney disease, we should be aware, a little bit limit our protein. If you have heart disease, we should limit our fat.
And some new research is emerging that basically says that a little fat on the body is probably good as
exactly.
You age. What is that all about?
Yeah, you know, the... One other thing that we were talking about, that when you look at outside and you look at that all this marketing actually advertised, that they're talking about weight, and they're talking about you should be very obsessive about your weight. Reality shows that when we're talking about overweight or we're talking about having some fats even in our diet, we should do a risk stratification for that person. Like if somebody has no risk of the heart disease, and there is basically no any other things that we consider this patient as a high-risk patient, being overweight is actually not a bad thing. A lot of the recent trials actually shows being overweight is much better than the people that are underweight.
But we're not talking about obese. We're talking about, what, 5'10"? When you say overweight, what do you really say?
Which means that we are not in obesity category. Our BMI is more than 25. I'm talking about people, the BMI is more than 25 and to like 30. It's like a 5 to 10 more than your BMI. You're not in the obesity category, which is mm-hmm. definitely dangerous, mm-hmm. but you're not also normal weight or you're not underweight.
And is that now a concurred in research or is it emerging research? I've seen a few papers.
It's concurred in the research as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the same thing about a fat, because as you ask about a fat, we know that because the fat is actually very helpful, a part of the brain, for the people that having memory loss or starting to have memory loss, having a little bit fat actually in the diet is helpful. We have recently FDA-approved diet that has a little bit fat in it that helpful for people that are starting to have dementia or also memory loss.
You know, one of the things that I've heard a number of physicians and researchers really attack are these marketing of games to elderly that are trying to teach them cognitive skills, and they say it's a waste of money, that you should, you know, put your time into nutrition, you should put more effort into, you know, the way you eat, the way you can, that these games are really a ripoff of seniors.
It's true. It's interesting because even till today, we're not talking about the past years. Whenever somebody showing that has short-term memory loss or to go to the doctor, the first instruction was go to the bookstore, buy one of this boring puzzle or crossword and sitting in the street and try to do it. I have a lot of patients actually complaining to me. I never liked doing the crossword when I was young. And now when I'm getting older, I have to do these boring things. Most of them, after 10 minutes of doing some couple crossword, they get bored. They actually put them aside. The same thing for a lot of games, which is actually the brain is stimulating games as well. Recently, a study actually shows, a lot of a study actually done in Europe as well, that for mental health, the best thing we can do for brain stimulation is actually starting to doing a task that can be a very simple task that should be something that you never done it before. Your brain didn't have experience for doing this before. And it also should be enjoyable. That can be very simple thing. Can be dancing, can be a sculpturing, can be painting, playing instrument. And that kind of, and also this kind of like a, most of this, the activity should be the activity that you always wanted to do it in your life, but you never had a time.
And one of the things that you stress in the book is connectivity, is social, right. You know, that one of the key aspects of growing older is not isolating yourself,
exactly.
Is remaining connective to individuals and how important that is.
It's a very good point because, unfortunately, one thing that we see these days that most of our elderly or senior, actually, when they get retired, they actually retire to the solitude of their home. The children's gone. They may lose a partner. They may have a problem with transportation. And they getting isolated from society. One thing that we know for brain stimulation is very, very important, that you still be with other people and talk to them. A lot of time, I just advise to my patient, just go to see your friend and just talk about a simple thing. Talk about weather. Talk about politics. Talk about any topics that you like. I mean, going and talking with other people instead of staying at home and just watching TV, which we know is also not going to be helpful for brain stimulation, that's going to be a very useful thing, just talking and be with other people.
But the whole concept of aging has changed. I mean, you know, the people say the 60 to do 40, 70 to do 50. But, you know, the way in which people live their lives, maybe it's on the coast, maybe, but people, there is a change afoot. People are very active. I'm very different from my parents and you know, when they were my age. And you know, we're living very active lives and different lives. So I would imagine the whole dynamic of what you're seeing is a whole cultural, social change of aging.
It is. It's true, actually. I mean, we have a new generation of baby boomers, and the people actually after age of 65 is very, very different with the last generation. But the other things we have to look at it, that lifestyle is also changing. Like, for example, the example you brought out about people living in the coast and they're actually living by themselves. One thing we know, when you're getting older, you definitely need companionship. You need to be with society. You need to be with other people. And also interacting with other people. I mentioned in the book that this interaction should not be necessary with the same people at your age. It should be with younger people. Our brain needs to have this continuous interaction and activity. And this should never stop, actually.
Why did you choose geriatrics? What was appealing to you?
It's a very good question. You know, I've been asked, well, for a lot of time, even from my patient, why I choose the geriatric as my subspecialty. You know, it's a long story, but if I really wanted to explain to it briefly, it's some reason I'm going to bring for you to what was the major reason I actually choose a geriatric. One of them is, I can say, is respect. One is fascination, personal rewards, and also investment. And duty.
Well, you grew up in a very different culture. You grew up in Iran, where the elderly are venerated, and right. It's a very different culture here in America. How has it been for you to, you know, look at the American right. culture of whereas, you know, aged are sort of, you know, tossed aside, whereas, you know, aged are in other cultures venerated?
Yes, true. I mean, in if you look at my culture, as you said, I mean, elderly people, they have a special status in the family, their community, and their society. They are considered very sage. They're highly respected by other people. And they have a special, the position in the family. And most of other people, they get their direction and even their guidance from the eldest person in the family. And that's why, since they are young, they actually have a dream to have this status one day in their life. And because of the years of experience that elderly people, they have it for years, the people actually like to listen to them. They feeling that taking care of elderly is kind of like honor for them. And they cherish with their collective wisdom. And this is in my culture. The other things that also I notice, I mean, as far as like aging, which I can tell you about, or society, I mean, here in the United States right now, 1.5 years ago, we had a baby. And when Sam arrived in our life, I mean, it was very interesting for me. I see a lot of excitement in my family, friends, colleague, that they wanted to be part of the baby care. We had a lot of volunteers. They wanted to stay all up night. They didn't mind to tolerate his, I mean, to listen to his cry. And we had a lot of volunteer line up to change his diaper. They even didn't mind that if there's any, I mean, anything on the dress and he spit on their dress. And they found that this is very enriching. Interestingly, when you look at the elderly and also look at the baby, this is the two vulnerable human in the same spectrum, early age and later age. And the elderly people, they also like to have this companionship, like to have the same love, same support, and they need it. The same thing that our baby actually needed. But when I look at our society right now, I mean, unfortunately here, I mean, it's in compare of the eastern part now, we live in a capitalistic country, Paul, and we know that, again, there's nothing wrong with making profit and wealth, but unfortunately, we should not evaluate everything on a monetary basis. I mean, I can see that, I mean, this society, I mean, everything should not be on the back of our elderly. We should not make our senior citizen to be forced to be out of the workflow and be replaced by the cheap labor or inexperienced labor because they're younger or they don't have experience. I think for parents, we, because of the long time and the hardship that they had to build this society, we owe them our time. We owe them our gratitude. We owe them our respect.
What's the most common question you're asked by your patients?
The most question I ask my patient in general, you mean in the medical?
Yeah, the geriatric patients that come to you. And is there a common question? Is there a common theme of knowledge of what they're seeking? Is there one thing, you know, as you talked about nutrition, mental health, you know, the book is filled with sort of chapters, you know, about those issues and nutraceuticals, which I want right. to touch on in a second. Is there any common? Are diets the number one thing that people ask about? Exercise, how to stay mentally healthy?
No, they ask all this question. Two questions I think they ask a lot. First, when most of the people they come to me, they have a very simple question. They ask me, should I take all this medication? Because they usually come with a long list of medication. Mm-hmm. They ask me as a geriatrician, should I be on all of them? I mean, I take a lot. I'm really tired of all this medication.
Why are they going to a geriatrician, first of all? Why have they chosen that specialty?
Most of the people, they come because they have two or three chronic disease. And most of this chronic disease, again, because they're very challenging to be treated, they take too many medication. They want opinion of a geriatrician to reviewing their medication to see if their medication is effective or is necessary for them. And on also the other thing, they come and ask about the same thing, mental health. A lot of them, they come and complain about depression. They complain about anxiety, that they specifically come to the geriatrician. Because a lot of time when they go to see a regular primary care in a very limited visit, like 15 minutes visit or 10 minute visit, there is no way they can address all of their questions. And most of the time they come to the senior care and geriatric because they need more time to explain. They need kind of like expertise to go all over their medication problems and address all of them.
There is a multi-billion dollar business in this country in nutraceuticals. Mm-hmm. And vitamins and the whole lot. What do you advise people in that regard?
You know, you're absolutely right. It's like I was just reading on the news, it's about $60 billion yearly on nutraceutical market now. And, you know, most of these vitamins and supplements that we have more than 100,000 over-the-counter medication right now in the United States. None of them are regulated by FDA. And there is no evidence supporting their benefit. When they are not regulated by FDA means that manufacturing of these products, they don't need to prove the efficacy and safety of these products. Now, as far as like a vitamin, it's just a very simple conclusion. We have two kind of vitamins. Briefly, we have water-soluble vitamins like B and C. If you take extra vitamin B and C, rest of them will be excreted. You're never going to absorb that. If you have a big box of orange and one orange can give you enough vitamin C, rest of them is going to go excreted in the urine. Then when we go to the fat-soluble vitamins like A, D, K, E, if you take extra of them, it's actually going to be a stain in the body and can be toxic. One of the best examples of vitamin D, which is very famous these days, everybody have going to the doctor to say, well, you have to take vitamin D. There are some a little bit evidence showing the vitamin D is helpful for fall, definitely helpful for bone. But now we have the problem. If you take extra vitamin D, especially because the diet, if you go to the grocery store, you see all the dairy products these days are fortified with vitamin A and D. It means you take some from nutrition, you also take extra supplement. And if you don't check your blood level to see if you really need vitamin D or not, you actually can have a side effect of toxic side effect of vitamin D.
What do people tell you about why they're so? When you tell a patient, you know, you really don't need to be taking all these nutraceuticals or vitamins, and they say, "Well, I have to take them, doctor. They help me." And you say, "Well, they really, you have a marginal, if any, impact." What do they continue? I'm sure because it is, as you said, an $80 billion business. What do they tell you? What convinces them?
It's a very good question. To be honest, I mean, I had a patient when I actually told the patient that, because one patient came to me and asked me about a vitamin, what kind of vitamin I should take. And my answer actually was, you don't need any vitamin. He was very upset. He actually left my clinic and because he really wanted to prescribe him vitamin for them. Most of the time when I explain to them why they don't need vitamins, they stop that. They stop the vitamins. And you know, I do a lot of public lecture as well and try to tell them that they really don't need all kind of supplement and vitamin. The other reason, Paul, most of the supplement and vitamin, they can interfere with the prescribing medication that we are taking. And if we don't know exactly, that can be sometimes dangerous.
And one of the keys, I think, of what you're telling people is get out of the house, go for a walk, mm-hmm. get up. You know, move.
Right.
You know, get movement in your life and physical activity.
Exactly. I mean, and to be honest, exercise, I think, is the best key for healthy aging. Exercise can help with the great physical and mental health. It shows that actually exercise can regulate the weight, help with the balance for elderly, definitely reduce the rate of depression in elderly, and definitely help with the memory. We know this day, today, we don't have any treatment for dementia. We know one thing, the people are starting to have memory loss, or they have MCI or mild cognitive insufficiency, the only thing can help them a lot to slowing the progress of the memory loss is doing moderate aerobic exercise and muscle strengthening exercise. It's been a large trials actually shows the efficacy of exercise.
Aerobic exercise is really one of the keys to keeping cognitive skills.
Exactly. Like swimming can be walking. You really don't need to do very drastic things.
You don't have to be a super athlete. You don't have to be a triathlete. Exactly. You just have to get out and do something.
And you don't need to even register in the gym.
What concerns you more, a patient who is overweight or a patient losing weight?
As a geriatrician, for me, when the patient losing weight is alarming sounds for me. And the reason is because we now have evidence that when people losing weight, in like a 3 years, even a small percentage of the weight, they can increase risk of death and frailty in them. And it's more concerning for a geriatrician when we see somebody in weight loss more than if I have somebody comes to me with a very high blood pressure or the number of the cholesterol is very high. I always worry about that because that could be a lot of reason. Can be medical reason, can be mental reason, can be medication the patient's taking. And that's why we go and explore about the cause of weight loss.
But you also think there's too much tendency to overtreat high cholesterol.
It's true. It's again, the same thing for like a blood pressure. When we are getting older, for example, I've as a geriatrician, I mean, I've seen a lot of my patients. They are in end of life. They are taking high dose cholesterol medication. When you see the patient, they're only bone and skin. And when you look at why the cholesterol medication never stopped, because they never stopped that. Patients taking for 20 years this cholesterol medication. Reality is that for elderly people, if we wanted to put them on cholesterol medication, we have to do risk stratification. We have to calculate, first of all, see if the patient is very high risk, that we need to decrease the cholesterol level, then we should put them on the cholesterol. I can tell you as a geriatrician, I'm more liberal on the cholesterol. And not because I am, evidence also support me that we should not push a lot, especially if you have a patient that has significantly weight loss for any other reason. And you kind of say, you know what, this is the time. We need to stop cholesterol medication. There's no benefit for taking it.
You often hear that the descent of an individual in aging is when they fall.
Mm-hmm.
And they fall and they break something significant and they go into rehab and that begins this process of... this process that leads to many times a very bad ending. What does balance impairment come from? What's happening in?
You know, the one thing that happen in our body when we age, and this has not happened like exactly at the age of 60 or 70. This has happened from age of 30 and 40. We're starting to losing our muscles mass, and we're starting to losing our bone as well. And also our water content. And this is starting from age of 30. Now, what happens is when we're getting older, our muscles start to shrink more. Or nerves also, they're not regulating very well, especially if you have other medical condition. Like, for example, you have diabetes and we have neuropathy related to that, means the nerves getting inflamed. Then we have a problem with balance. I mean, this is exactly like I was watching my son when he just started walking. But when I was looking at his walking, on the beginning of walking, I could see that his balance is very impaired, exactly like my elderly patient. They're same category. And the reason is because he doesn't have a strong muscles in order to get him up and able to walk. The same thing happened when we're getting older. That's why we try to emphasize a lot on muscle strengthening exercise, especially on the legs area, on the hips area, because if the muscle muscle continues to shrink and becomes smaller, the balance will be impaired. There is a lot of other medical diseases that can also impair the balance. Like, for example, neurologic problem. Like, for example, people have Parkinson's disease. They can have the balance problem. A lot of medications also we're taking that can impair with the balance. A lot of blood pressure medication make the people feel lightheaded and dizzy, and they can have a problem with balance. The other things is ears. If the people getting some more ear problem or vestibular problem inside the ear, especially very common in the elderly, they can have the balance problem as well.
When you advise people to take a look at their pharmaceuticals and what they're taking, what do you urge them? How do you go about that, having that discussion?
You know, that part will be a very important part, I think, whenever we're getting older. And the reason, again, as we discussed, when we're getting older, we at least probably have one or two or three chronic disease. And that means that we at least need five or six kind of medication. One thing we know, that a lot of people suffering these days, that we call it polypharmacy, means they're taking too many medications. And the problem is adverse drug events of each medication. And some of this medication can have drug-drug interaction. One of the other thing is here is a prescription cascade that a lot of people have. I always tell to my patient as well this example. And what does it mean is, for example, you come to me and you're telling me that I have a sleeping problem. I will give you, okay, this is the sleeping medication, take it and it's going to help you. You will go, you come back for follow-up after 2 months, and you come to me and say, you know what, the sleeping medication you give it to me, it works very well. But now during the day, I feel very fatigued. I said, well, okay, well, let me give you a stimulant during the day to help you with this fatigue without knowing that this is a side effect of a sleeping medication. I give you a stimulant, it works on you. 3 months later, you come to me and say, you know what, my heart rate is racing because of a stimulant. Instead of stopping all this medication, I give you beta blocker to slowing your heart rate. You take beta blocker, 6 months later, you come to me and say, I have depression. Instead of stopping all of them, I give you antidepressant medication. You come to me next year and say, I have weight gain. You know, I start you with one sleeping medication. I ended up in 2 years with you with six kind of pills. Each one is treating the side effect of another medication. This is a very common practice these days, Paul.
But why? I mean, you would think that a physician would stop and say, well, maybe we should sort of rethink the meds that you're on, and perhaps the meds that you're on are leading to these new, you know, effects. Why wouldn't the physician be doing that instead of having to go to a specialist to say, let's really take a close look at your medications?
There is two problems I've observed, actually. One thing is changing the doctors or go to the different specialists. Like, for example, they go to their GI doctor, and the GI doctor is also not aware of other medication, the other medication the patient is taking, and give another medication, actually put the patient on a prescription cascade. And or they come to me and I give them a treatment. Definitely some medication has a side effect. Instead of coming back to me and explain to me about a side effect, they quickly change their doctor, go to the Dr. B. And Dr. B is starting to give another medication to treat the side effect of my medication. That's why I always advise to my patient, whenever you start a medication with one doctor.
Continuity of care.
Exactly. Go back to the same doctor
and
explain the side effect. We should know that we are unique. I mean, everyone has some reaction to medication. It doesn't mean that one medication that works on you, it may not work on your cousin. And or the same thing. And that's why whenever you have a side effect, it's better to come to the doctor and explain the side effect, and the doctor can actually explore and stop the medication or change the medication.
Finally, you close the book with a chapter on choosing a geriatrician. What's important for a patient to consider when they are choosing a geriatrician?
I think the most important thing is connection. You mean the same thing that we explain about, like, for example, medication and all instruction. And the most important thing for all the patient, they need to know if they can connect to that doctor. Means connection to the doctor means, first of all, they should trust the doctor. And again, I explain even in my book that you may find a doctor that has a great research background, very famous. But when you go to that doctor, you really don't like the bedside manner of the doctor. That means that doctor is not your doctor. But you go to the doctor is not famous at all. But when you spend 5 minutes with that doctor, you really find this is the one. This is the one I can trust. Because the doctor-patient relationship is the key.
But what point, what is the point that if somebody, an elderly person, should say, I should really see a gerontologist? What should bring them into your office?
Right. I think for most of the geriatric syndrome, Like, for example, I mean, we talk about a fall, we talk about urinary problems and GI problems related to the elderly. Dementia as well, it's very important. Most of the neurological problems that are actually going on, especially in elderly age. Anybody has a chronic disease in elderly age, I think they get benefit of having consulting with geriatrician. The problem is we don't have enough geriatrician in this country. We only have 8,000 board-certified geriatrician in this country, and they're not able to serve this huge population of the aging that it will be actually double in 2030. But one thing that we recommend, you always can stay with your primary care, and it's better every 6 months or a year seen by a gerontologist to just kind of review whole picture and help your primary care for in order to have a better care.
And the book is called Past a Healthy Aging. How does someone buy it? Where do they buy it? Any bookstore? Do they have to buy it online? Amazon?
The book is available on Amazon and both in the paperbacks and also Kindle. Also is available on the Nook and also Barnes & Noble online and also iTunes and Apple.
Great. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much, Paul. Appreciate it.
The preceding program is copyrighted by the Board of Trustees of Stanford University. One to One is produced by the School of Medicine's Office of Communication and Public Affairs. For more information, please visit us at mednews.stanford.edu.